You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is my interview with actor Rory Kinnear for Men.
What are you doing here?
Hey, Rory, how are you today?
Yeah, great. Thanks. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Doing really well. Thank you. I'm excited to talk to you about this project here for Men because it's a very, very unique experience for any actor to be playing multiple roles, I feel, whether it's on stage, on television, or on film. So I'm sure for you, this was definitely a unique challenge.
Yeah, I mean, unique in the number. I mean, weirdly, I have played multiple roles in the same scene a few times before, and then immediately went off after this and did Our Flag Means Death, where I played twin brothers as well. So
hilarious show, by the way.
Oh, great! Thanks. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I as weird as it was being, particularly in that pub scene where at least five of the characters were all together in the same room and having to shoot all that, I'm aware that that is more of a sort of a technical challenge. But it was, for me, I really wanted to make sure that all these characters felt just as embedded into the village and the background as much as the sort of the trees and the grass and the deers, etc. So I wanted to make sure that as much as I knew they were kind of representations and archetypes when they were on the page, so I wanted to make sure that they were sort of fully rounded and fleshed out human beings as well.
Well, yeah, and I know that your background, being someone who comes from the Royal Shakespeare Company and working so extensively on stage, I remember when I did stage works, we would have to chart all of these different backgrounds for each of the characters that we were playing and kind of like write out these like mini biographies. So as I understand, you did this for each of these characters as well. And so I'm curious to know, like, from that standpoint, what was that like? Did you see it differently than any other roles that you've taken on before? Or like, because I'm wondering if there was like a thing that linked all of them other than biologically them all being men. Did you like see like a through line in all these characters?
I think they were probably I think there was probably a bit of loneliness to all of them. Mm. And I think that probably chimed with that sense of them needing something maybe from Harper. Whatever that might be. In some ways the job was like any other, in the sense that you're creating a character and trying to live in their shoes. The only thing that was different was that you were doing it, playing different characters twice or three times a week. I guess there were lots of sort of theatre similarities. Alex likes to work in, chronologically, so that was an enormous help, obviously. But it's certainly sort of was the first time I had done that on film, and it's certainly the thing I missed working in film, that sense of being able to chart the story, and tell it every night, and being I guess unthinking about the way that previous scenes knock into the next one and how the arc of the character is sort of generated by those scenes being put together. So to have that on film, albeit, day to day rather than, moment or, night to night, was really, really useful. And obviously it was a small cast and mainly one location. So there was lots of things that were similar to the theatre. And also when you're starting off in your theatre career, particularly doing things like Shakespeare with the need of larger casts, you're often being required to play two or three people as well. Yep. I guess that was another similarity to it.
Absolutely. And I'm curious to know, because you said that this was shot chronologically, so specifically for that pub scene where so many of your characters are located in that single location, was it as simple as on the day you would shoot coverage for one character, go do a wardrobe change, come back as another? Or were you doing different characters, different days? Like, how did it work?
Pretty much, Matt. I mean, I think that scene was shot over maybe 2.5 days, and half of the day was basically sort of rehearsing it and trying to work it out. And there were, you know, certain restrictions in terms of how it was going to be shot and how, you know, how far you could stray from one side of the bar to the other. But by and large, you know, we rehearsed it with me playing all the different parts and rehearsed it, you know, 5 times so that I would be comfortable knowing what those characters were doing. And then we had stand-ins observing that, who would then, you know, do that whilst I played one of the other characters. And they had, you know, learnt their lines, so they were, you know, playing the parts. And so Jesse was acting with them rather than necessarily with me at that point. Mm-hmm. And then one day I think I was 3 of the characters, and another day I was 2 of the characters. Interesting to sort of, A, keep your wits about you and make sure one character doesn't bleed into the other. You realize that you had, you know, done that biography work beforehand and done the work with you know, hair and makeup and costume to make sure that you felt comfortable within those people, because, you know, certainly with, say, the landlord, I think I was only him for like 2 or 3 hours, so you had to make sure you sort of hit the ground running with them, because you didn't want them to necessarily stand out as being less credible than others. I think also we would just we would have to make sure that we were getting all the coverage, and obviously a lot of that was about angles and about making sure you didn't go from one side to the other. But in many ways it was kind of it was easier for me, I think, rather than necessarily for Jesse, who was having to get her head around these people constantly changing who was playing them.
Yeah. I understand, obviously, that you have had experience working in big budget films that use a lot of practical and CGI. Of course, I'm referring to the James Bond films. However, your character of Bill Tanner is, for the most part, usually sitting behind a desk most of the time in those movies. However, in Men, you have a couple of scenes where you are dealing with a combination of practical and CGI effects. One gross... gory thing in particular, but I don't want to reveal here necessarily in the third act, that I just found to be so amusing. I was wondering how much of that was practical versus how much of it was actual CGI enhancement, and what that experience was like working with that for you.
You know, all things relative, but it was quite cold and uncomfortable. I would say there was certainly a degree of me having to use my imagination as to how this was going to turn out, so that I could sort of offer up what I hoped might be useful. Equally, they built these sort of weird models and prosthetics that I would have to emerge from, and by and large, absolutely covered in goo and sort of mushed banana, and it was the middle of the night in an unseasonably cold April, and you did that for like 7 or 8 days, so you can imagine it wasn't necessarily that you wouldn't necessarily race back for Men too if that was going to be the opening gambit of a sequel. But the first night when I was playing that green man figure, so you'd have to, you know, I think it was about a 7.5 hour makeup. So you'd, you know, have to be in about 1, and then you wouldn't really be on set and be able to shoot until about 9. I was choosing to vocalize all these births as well. And obviously, you know, we don't use that in the film. We use the sort of soundtrack of Jessie and her screams, but I was having to vocalize. So in the middle of this field, in, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning in the Cotswolds, you wake up all the neighboring livestock. So there was this sort of call and response that I had with various sheep and cows in various fields around as I myself was sort of lowing, giving birth to this this queen. And Jesse and I, we got very well, and we had occasional trouble trying to keep it together with a straight face. But I think we sort of knew that night if we began to take it, if we didn't take it seriously, or if we began to find it funny, we would never be able to get it back. So we held on tight to each other.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book. And together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, this is Gary Chahot welcoming you to check out the French History Podcast. Our main show covers the history of France from the first humans until present. If you liked Mike Duncan's The History of Rome and wanted a similar program covering the land of beauty, culture, and love, we are exactly that. We also host world-renowned scholars who have delivered guest episodes on their specialties, including 18th century pirates, revolutionary booksellers in 20th century Paris, the special friendship between the Marquis de Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson, and numerous others. Learn what you love and listen to the French History Podcast today.
I'm glad that you mentioned a little bit of humor on set there between you and Jesse, because I do think that your scenes as the owner of the holiday house that Harper is renting, it adds so much levity to such a depressing and dark film at times. I was very taken aback by how much I laughed during this movie, thanks to your performance. Was that something that was always on the page, or is that something through your development of the character you and Alex worked into the screenplay more?
I think there was quite a lot sort of on the day that I would offer up as Jeffrey. And I think he was, you know, his kind of slights or anything that you might find slightly uncomfortable about him, he is essentially, I think, I mean, obviously until the end, but when we meet him, he's essentially a sort of a benign figure, albeit maybe hamstrung by a sense of tradition or the way things should be done and the way men and women should interact with each other. But I don't think she feels any necessary threat from him to begin with. And it was interesting just in terms of coming onto set each day. People treated me completely differently, and I wasn't staying in character between takes or scenes. I was Rory, but people treated me completely differently depending on who I turned up as. When Jeffrey was around, it was sort of party time. Everyone was thrilled to see him, and everyone sort of found him funny and loved him. Whereas, you know, I turn up as the vicar and people would sort of shun me all day, and I have to remind them that, you know, it is still me here. And yeah, I guess on the day, Alex was always sort of up for, you know, any offerings that one might come up with. And I think probably with Jeffrey, and knowing that it was the beginning of the film and that you wanted to make sure that there was some levity there as well.
Which character would you say was the most fun to play, and which character would you say was the most challenging?
Probably challenging the ones you spend least time with, just because, you know, it's become so much easier to play someone when you've spent more time as them. So, you know, I got to spend most time as Jeffrey. So in some ways he was not only the easiest, but he was the one that, yeah, I knew best by the end of the shoot. I guess that answers both of them.
Sure. Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe there is some CGI enhancement being done on your face to de-age you. Am I correct in saying that?
As the little boy, yeah.
Yes. So yeah. What was that experience like, seeing your face on screen with those de-aging effects?
There was I would rehearse the scene with Jesse as the boy, and then very sweet young chap would then do what I was doing in that rehearsal, but inevitably, you know, slightly differently. And so then I would, after he'd been filmed, I would then have to try and recreate basically what his head did. Depending on where his head was pointed, or, you know, at what height he was. So particularly, I mean, like in the church, it was probably easier because you would mainly just sat down on those steps. And then you could sort of hide yourself away under the mask when he gets up. But when we're in the kitchen at the end and he's sort of walking towards her as she's holding the knife out of him, I had to obviously get down at his level. So they sort of gave me this sort of wheelie stool that I would push myself along with as I walked towards her. So, that couldn't have felt more unlike what you were supposed to be achieving. But it's amazing when you see it all put together. And so, you know, it wasn't just the fact that my face looked younger. It was my face was on this boy's body as well. And that it seemed to actually work. That's what one couldn't believe.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. I remember at one point during the movie, I leaned over to my friend and I was like, I think they're all played by Rory. And then like a few minutes later, I leaned back over again and I'm like, oh my God, they're all played by Rory. So even though they're all very different in their physical stature, their personalities, their look, you had me fooled early on.
I did an interview today in which one of the journalists, when they'd seen a screening of it over here in the UK, she had lent to her friend the shot of the deer corpse in the woods, and she'd leant over and said, is that him too?
Hey, you never know. This film, you never know. Last question, slightly off topic here, but I would like to know, No Time to Die put an end to the Daniel Craig era as James Bond here. However, there's been a precedent set with Judi Dench, you know, going from one set of Bond films to another, even when they change actors. Has there been any discussion about you, Rafe, Naomi, or anybody like kind of carrying over to the next set? And is that something that you would be open to do if asked?
It's always good fun. I mean, they're great fun to do. And it's really, really entertaining, fun stuff to be a part of. And obviously, having done four of them now, while it feels quite fun to slip back into a character that you know so well. And obviously, Daniel, Ben, Rafe, Naomi, and I all get on very well. And we know each other quite well. We knew each other before, so it was sort of a nice reunion to be on set. I've never known from film to film whether I'm going to be in the next one. So in many ways, it's no different at the moment. Whilst, you know, you can fully understand they might want to keep that sense of continuity, but I also could completely understand if they decide to make a whole new chapter. So we'll wait and find out.
All right. And you know what? This is the last one. I apologize. It's very short, though. You've played, obviously, so many characters in this movie. I'm curious to know, is there any type of character that you have not played yet that you're like chomping at the bits? Oh, I hope this role comes around at some point or another that you can play. Is it a James Bond villain? Like, what would it be?
I don't know. I mean, like, I guess probably on stage, I've still got a few sort of ambitions, but I don't like to say them just because then maybe the director will come to you and say, well, let's do it. And I'll think of what the play means to me afterwards, as soon as you've said yes. Mm. And whereas I guess with both with film and TV and theatre, you want it to start with the director or the writer, people whose vision is going to be, you know, the whole thing is going to be. And don't mean to underestimate my profession, but we are sort of the last piece of the puzzle. As delicious cherries we might be, we are sort of the cherry on the cake. So I want to make sure that that it means something to the originators of the idea, rather than just me saying I want to do this and someone saying, oh, all right.
I hear you. Well, Rory, I really appreciate you taking the time here to talk about this. It was a very, very ambitious project, and one that I know from everyone that has seen the film is greatly appreciating your work on. And how could they not? You're funny. You're terrifying. You basically run all the gamut of emotions here through all the different men that you play in Men. So I thank you very, very much here for taking the time to talk about it with me.
Thank you very much, Matt. Cheers.
Absolutely. Have a good rest of your day.
You too, man.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to my interview with Rory Kinnear from Men here on the Next Best Picture podcast. Men is currently playing in theaters from A24. You will be listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and we are proud to be part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and you can subscribe to us anywhere where you subscribe to podcasts. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can also lend on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you will get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you so much for listening, as always, and we shall see you all next time.
I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X grown-up.
Every week, the Gen X grown-up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, GenXGrownUp.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, I think that was good enough.
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right.
I've never done it. No. Right.